page 147. The events that followed the first battle, pages 147 through 172. Page 148 is blank. Page 149. Verily, the people of the North Country never act as human beings of reason and sense. After the attack of the Mist Monsters and their beating back by Bullywhiff and his company, with me amongst them, the men of the kingdom of Hrothgar did nothing. There was no celebration, no feasting, no jubilation or display of happiness. From far and wide, the people of the kingdom came to view the dangling arm of the fiend, which hung in the great hall, and this they greeted with much amazement and astonishment. But Hrothgar himself, the half-blind old man, expressed no pleasure, and presented Bullywhiff and his company with no gifts, planned no feasts, gave him no slaves, no silver, no precious garments, or any other sign of honor. Contrary to any expression of pleasure, King Hrothgar made a long face and was solemn, and seemed more fearful than he had been before. Page 150. I myself, though I did not speak it aloud, suspected that Hrothgar preferred his earlier condition before the black mist was beaten. Nor was Bullywhiff different in manner. He called for no ceremonies, no feasting, no drinking, or eating of food. The nobles, who had died valiantly in the battle of the night, were quickly placed in pits with a wooden roof over the top, and left there for the assigned 10 days. There was haste in this matter. Yet it was only in the laying out of the dead warriors that Bullywhiff and his comrades showed happiness, or allowed themselves any smiles. After further time among the Northmen, I learned that they smile upon any death in battle, for this is pleasure taken on behalf of the dead person, and not the living. They are pleased when any man dies a warrior's death. Also the opposite is held true by them. They show distress when a man dies in his sleep or in a bed. They say of such a man, he died as a cow in the straw. This is no insult, but it is a reason for mourning the death. The Northmen believe that how a man dies determines his condition in the afterlife, and they value the death of a warrior in battle above all. Page 151. A straw death is shameful. Any man who dies in his sleep is said by them to be strangled by the Marin, or Mare of the Night. This creature is a woman, which makes such a death shameful, for to die at the hands of a woman is degrading above all things. Also they say to die without your weapon is degrading, and a Northman warrior will always sleep with his weapons, so that if the Marin comes at night, he will have his weapons in hand. Seldom does a warrior die of some illness, or of the enfeeblement of age. I heard of one king, of the name Anna, who lived to such an age that he became as an infant, toothless and existing upon the food of an infant, and he spent all his days in his bed drinking milk from a horn. But this was told to me as most uncommon in the North Country. With my own eyes I saw few men grow very old, by which I mean grow old to the time when the beard is not only white but falling out from the chin and face. Several of their women live to great age, especially such as the old crone they call the Angel of Death. These old women are counted as having magical powers in healing of wounds, casting of spells, banishing evil influences, and foretelling the future of events. Page 152. The women of the North people do not fight among themselves, and often did I see them intercede in a growing brawl or duel of two men to quench the rising anger. This they will do especially if the warriors are thickened and slow with drink. This is often the circumstance. Now the Northmen, who drink much liquor, and at all hours of the day and night, drink nothing on the day after the battle. Seldom did the people of Hrothgar offer them a cup, and when it happened, the cup was refused. This I found most puzzling, and spoke of it finally to Hergr. Hergr shook his shoulders in the Northman's gesture of unconcern or indifference. "Everyone is afraid," he said. I inquired why there should still be a reason to fear. He spoke thus, "It is because they know that the black mist will return." Now I admit that I was puffed with the arrogance of a fighting man, though in truth I knew I did not deserve such a posture. Even so, I felt exhilaration at my survival, and the people of Hrothgar treated me as one of a company of mighty warriors. I said boldly, "Who cares for that? If they come again, we shall beat them a second time." Page 153. Indeed, I was vain as a young cock, and I am abashed now to think upon my strutting." Hergur responded, "The kingdom of Hrothgar has no fighting warriors or earls. They are all long since dead, and we alone must defend the kingdom. Yesterday was 13. Today we are 10, and of that 10, 2 are wounded and cannot fight as full men. The Black Mist is angered, and it will take a terrible vengeance." I said to Hergur, who had suffered some minor wounds in the fray, but nothing so fierce as the claw marks upon my own face, which I bore proudly, that I feared nothing the demons would do. He answered curtly that I was an Arab and understood nothing of the ways of the North Country, and he told me that the vengeance of the Black Mist would be terrible and profound. He said, "They will return as Khorgan." I did not know the sense of the word. "What is Khorgan?" he said to me. "The glowworm dragon, which swoops down through the air." Now this seemed fanciful, but I had already seen the sea monsters just as they said that such beasts truly lived, and also I saw Hergur's strained and tired countenance, and I perceived that he believed in the glowworm dragon. Page 154. I said, "When will Khorgan come?" "Perhaps tonight," Hergur said. Verily, even as he spoke, I saw that Bullywiff, though he had slept not at all during the night and his eyes were red and heavy with fatigue, was directing anew the building of defenses around the Hall of Heorot. All the people of the kingdom worked, the children and the women and the old men and the slaves as well, under the direction of Bullywiff and his lieutenant, Ecgtheow. This is what they did. About the perimeter of Heorot and the adjacent buildings, those being the dwellings of the King Hrothgar and some of his nobles, and the rude huts of the slaves of these families, and one or another of the farmers who live closest to the sea, all around this area, Bullywiff erected a kind of fence of crossed lances and poles with sharpened points. This fence was not higher than a man's shoulders, and although the points were sharp and menacing, I could not see the value of this defense, for men could scale it easily. I spoke of this to Hergur, who called me a stupid Arab. Hergur was in an ill temper. Now a further defense was constructed, a ditch outside the pole fence, 1.5 paces beyond. Page 155. This ditch was most peculiar. It was not deep, never more than a man's knees, and often less. It was unevenly dug, so that in places it was shallow, and in other places deeper, with small pits. And in places short lances were sunk into the earth, pointed upward. I understood the value of this paltry ditch no better than the fence, but I did not inquire of Hergur, already knowing his mood. Instead, I aided in the work as best I could, pausing only once to have my way with a slave woman in the Northman's fashion. For in the excitement of the night's battle and the day's preparations, I was most energetic. Now, during my journey with Bullywiff and his warriors up the Volga, Hergur had told me that unknown women, especially if attractive or seductive, were to be mistrusted. Hergur said to me that within the forests and wild places of the North Country there live women who are called wood women. These wood women entice men by their beauty and soft words. Yet when a man approaches them, he finds that they are hollow at the back part and are apparitions. Then the wood women cast a spell upon the seduced man, and he becomes their captive. Now Hergur had thus warned me, and verily it is true, that I approached the slave woman with trepidation, because I did not know her. Page 156. And I felt her back with my hand, and she laughed, for she knew the reason of the touch, to assure myself that she was no wood spirit. I felt a fool at that time, and cursed myself for placing faith in a heathen superstition. Yet I have discovered that if all those around you believe some particular thing, you will soon be tempted to share in that belief. And so it was with me. The women of the North people are pale as the men, and equally as tall in stature. The greater number of them look down upon my head. The women have blue eyes and wear their hair very long, but the hair is fine and easily snarled. Therefore they bundle it up about their necks and upon their heads. To aid in this, they have fashioned for themselves all manner of clasps and pins of ornamented silver or wood. This constitutes their principal adornment. Also, the wife of a rich man wears neck chains of gold and silver, as I have earlier said. So, too, do the women favor bracelets of silver formed in the shapes of dragons and snakes, and these they wear upon the arm between the elbow and shoulder. Page 157. The designs of the North people are intricate and interlaced, as if to portray the weaving of three branches or serpents. These designs are most beautiful. Footnote 1. The North people account themselves keen judges of beauty in women, but in truth all their women seem to my eyes to be emaciated, their bodies all angles and lumpy with bones. Their faces, too, are bony, and the cheeks set high. These qualities the Northmen value and praise, although such a woman would not attract a glance in the City of Peace, but would be accounted no better than a half-starved dog with protruding ribs. The North women have ribs that protrude in just such a fashion. I do not know why the women are so thin, for they eat lustily and as much as the men, yet gain no flesh upon their bodies. Also the women show no deference or any demure behavior. They are never veiled, and they relieve themselves in public places, as suits their urge. Similarly, they will make bold advances to any man who catches their fancy, as if they were men themselves, and the warriors never chide them for this. Footnote 1. An Arab would be especially inclined to think so, for Islamic religious art tends to be non-representational, and in quality similar to much Scandinavian art, which often seems to favor pure design. However, the Norsemen had no injunction against representing gods, and often did so. Return to text. Page 158. Such is the case even if the women be a slave, for as I have said, the Northmen are most kind and forbearing to their slaves, especially the women slaves. With the progression of the day, I saw clearly that the defenses of Bullywiff would not be completed by nightfall, neither the pole fence nor the shallow ditch. Bullywiff saw it also, and called to King Hrothgar, who summoned the old crone. This old crone, who was withered and had the beard of a man, killed a sheep and spread the entrails, footnote 2, on the ground. Then she made a variety of chanting song, which lasted a lengthy time, and much supplication to the sky. I still did not ask Hrugar of this, because of his mood. Footnote 2. Is a series of simple markings. Literally, veins. The Arabic phrase has led to some scholarly errors. E. D. Graham has written, for example, that the Vikings foretold the future by a ritual of cutting the veins of animals and spreading them on the ground. This is almost certainly wrong. The Arabic phrase for cleaning an animal is cutting the veins, and Ibn Fadlan was here referring to the widespread practice of divination by examination of entrails. Linguists who deal with such vernacular phrases all the time are fond of discrepancies in meaning. A favorite example of Halstead's is the English warning, "Look out," which usually means that one should do exactly the opposite and dive for cover. Return to text. Page 159. Instead, I watched the other warriors of Bullywiff, who looked to the sea. The ocean was gray and rough, the sky laden, but a strong breeze blew toward the land. This satisfied the warriors, and I guessed the reason, that an ocean breeze toward the land would prevent the mist from descending from the hills. This was true. Upon nightfall, work had halted on the defenses, and to my perplexity, Hrothgar held another banquet of splendid proportions. And this evening, while I watched, Bullywiff and Hrugar and all the other warriors drank much mead and reveled as if they lacked any worldly cares, and had their way with the slave women, and then all sank into a stuporous droning sleep. Now this also I learned, that each of the warriors of Bullywiff had chosen from among the slave women one whom in particular they favored, although not to the exclusion of others. In intoxication, Hrugar said to me of the women he had favored, "She shall die with me if need be." From this I took as the meaning that each of the warriors of Bullywiff had selected some woman who would die for him upon the funeral pyre, and this woman they treated with more courtesy and attention than the others, for they were visitors to this country and had no slave woman of their own who could be ordered by kin to do their bidding.